Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about how to apply for an injunction in family law. I am joined by a third six pupil barrister, India Flanagan, from Thomas More Chambers in London. India is a pupil barrister and she is currently developing a common law practice. She practices in a wide variety of areas, including in family and criminal law. Thank you very much for joining us, India.
Thanks for having me, Hattie.
Okay, so here we are, how to apply for an injunction in family law. And what we're going to try to do in this podcast is take our listeners through a step-by-step guide, starting right from the beginning, because I think it'll be very helpful for us to explain what is an injunction and how can getting an injunction help me. Let's talk about that, India.
Well, Hattie, an injunction, very simply, is a court order that restricts someone from doing something. So in a family context, injunctions are commonly designed to protect individuals who are experiencing domestic abuse by preventing someone from causing them further harm. So in a family, in that specific domestic violence context, there are two main injunctions. One is called a non-molestation order, and one is called an occupation order. And a non-molestation order, very simply, prevents further harm or violence or harassment to you and your children. And an occupation order can restrict or prevent someone from continuing to reside in the family home. And therefore, having that formal court protection can really help you, because if someone breaks the terms of that order, both a non-molestation order and an occupation order carry a power of arrest. So yes, police can arrest that individual.
Yes, I think that this is one of the most powerful things about an injunction, and I know that it was only recent years that an arrest order comes automatically now with an injunction, whereas before my knowledge is that you had to apply to have an arrest order attached. Yes. I think it's very powerful that if you have this order in place so that somebody can't be abusive or harassment or basically in any shape or form, or come near a property, and there will be a set meter, usually 100 meters, that sort of thing. If they breach that order, and you can prove that they breached that order, then they are automatically arrested if you report it to the police, and then they have to explain their way out. They have to say
why they didn't breach the order. And I think that injunctions are very powerful things that are not that difficult to obtain, meaning it is not a really long drawn out court process. And the courts are very, very used to seeing people who come in a very distressed way and say, look, I need this person to go away. I need them just to not have access to me. And we're talking about text messages. We're talking about online social media, contact via online social media, telephone, and also indirect contact. For example, where a perpetrator of this sort of behavior goes to their friend who's, you know, happy to carry a really horrible message from them to you. That is also, you know, indirect contact, and it's part of the orders that they can't directly or indirectly contact you to cause any harm. So I think there's lots of benefit in getting one of those in, dear, isn't there? You know, if you're in this sort of situation, this horrible sort of situation.
Yes, I completely agree with everything you just said, Hattie. And that's why really domestic violence isn't called domestic violence anymore. It's called domestic abuse to reflect the fact that there are many forms of violence.
Yes.
And unfortunately, commonly now, it's coercive and controlling behaviour, and it's online abuse and it's controlling bank accounts. Those are very common forms of domestic abuse. And yes, going back to your point about that criminal formal protection, I mean, the breach of a non-molestation order is a criminal offence, and a defendant would have to prove that he had a reasonable excuse in order to be acquitted.
Yes.
So there is that formal protection for applicants.
Yes. And I think it's important for us to say, well, what kind of circumstances do people apply to get injunctions in? Because we always seem to think, I think there's a common perception that a controlling behavior, somebody restricting your movements, is not abuse. And abuse comes in so many various forms. I mean, we've got podcasts on domestic abuse and things like that. But if for the purposes of applying for an injunction, I think, you know, my certain view on that is if anybody's making you feel unhappy and uncomfortable and you know, upsetting you, that's the starting point, isn't it, India?
Exactly right. Anyone can apply for an injunction. The only very important thing to add with that is that the person that's causing you the harm, that's inflicting the violence on you, has to be associated with you. And that is a test that the courts will look at. So what do I mean by an associated person? Well, it's quite a broad range. It can be your spouse or your civil partner, someone that you've been engaged to, or a close family member, a parent, a sibling, for example. But they do have to be associated with you. But yes, if they are causing you that harm and they're associated with you, absolutely, you should really be considering applying.
Yes, I mean, you know, I think that some basic common sense has to come into it, in the sense that if you've said, if you're not able to tell that person to stop, there are situations where people are fearful of doing that. Or if you've been telling that person to stop and they're not stopping, then these are all reasons to say, right, I need that person to not be able to do and carry out these actions that are upsetting, they are demoralizing. And, you know, as I said, some people don't think that, oh, I need to be physically hit by somebody in order to think about an injunction. You know, it could be where you're perhaps potentially going through a separation or a divorce, and you're getting harassing messages or telephone calls or text messages, or the person's turning up at the door all the time, upsetting, you know, children that you may have. So there are various reasons why you could think about an injunction. That's, as I said, it's not a very difficult order to, and a process to go through in order to obtain, in the sense of the actual process of it. So let's talk about, if you want to apply for an injunction, how would somebody go about applying for an injunction? They're sitting there, they're thinking, oh my God, this would help me in my life right now, you know, to get the other person just away from me and away from harming me mentally, physically, or whatever. How would they go about that, India?
Yeah, I think this is a very important question, because too often I find that the focus is on what's an injunction and what are the two types of injunction you can get and what's the legal test. But actually, Hattie, you're absolutely right. You really need to know the practicalities of making an application in order to do one effectively. So in order to apply for an injunction, you would need to make a written application on a specific application form, and this is called an FL-401, and we'll set out hopefully later how to access that form. And then you'll need to send that form together with a witness statement, which again we'll explain what you should put in that witness statement. And then depending on whether or not you want to keep your contact details separate, you'll need to also send another form called a C8. And also, Hattie, with terms of practicalities of your application, I think it might be worthwhile to note that depending on your income, you might be able to apply for legal aid. And I would advise if you, and that depends on your income, contacting a legal aid solicitor who will be able to tell you whether or not you are eligible.
Yes, yes. And that's if you want to go through a solicitor to make the application. Obviously, if you're saying, look, I want to try and do this myself, if that is your position, then a form FL-401. We mentioned the form C8. And I think that's important to expand on that just a little bit, India, because what we're saying is, if you're going to try and get away from the person that's causing you this domestic abuse, in order that you can try and then apply for an injunction, and you don't want that person to know where you're living or who you're staying with during that time, you can keep your contact details, being your address, discreet. And so the court will not divulge that information on any court documentation that the potential perpetrator could see. That's what we're saying. So you need to fill out a separate form to say to the court, I do not wish for my contact details to be divulged. And that's the form C8. So let's firstly talk about, where can we find the forms? Where can people find the forms to make an application for an injunction, India?
Well, you need to go to a page called Court and Tribunal Forms, and this is a gov.uk page. And when you go to that page, it will give you lots of different sections. And there'll be a document on Get Legally Speaking, which will hopefully have all the links to what I'm describing.
In our articles, yes, we'll put that up.
But if you scroll to F, on Court and Tribunal Forms, and then you search for the form FL-401, this will bring up three versions. They're all exactly the same, but one's standard version, one's a large print, and one's a Welsh version. If you don't have access to your computer, you'll need to contact your local court, and we can explain how to do that, and they will send you a copy. But for those who do have access to the internet, it's Court and Tribunal Forms, and then it's F for Family Law Forms, and you search for FL-401, and you also search for C8. Both forms will be accessible.
Yes, yes. I think there's also a search button, isn't there? So if you're scrolling down on the gov.uk page looking for it, you can also go form FL-401, and that should bring that up. Also, failing that, if you're finding that a bit tricky to do, Google court form FL-401, and the gov.uk link normally does come up more than often than not, which is great because you can just click through and you go straight through to the government website where these forms are available. So let's talk about what other documentation you need to put together with this FL-401. And one of the key documents is obviously a witness statement, India, isn't it? To say, right, this is my story, this is why I'm making this application. Let's talk about some of the key points that should be considered when you're filling out a witness statement to go along with to support an injunction application.
Well, firstly, it's very important just to state that there is no set form for your witness statement. You can handwrite it or you can type it. It's completely up to you. The judge, very simply, will want to know why you are applying for an injunction. So he or she will want to consider your circumstances to determine whether or not an injunction is really necessary in your case. So They'll be looking at why you are applying for the injunction. And if you are making an urgent application, so one that's called a without notice or ex parte injunction, then they will also want to consider the urgency. And the structure is completely up to you, and it depends on the facts of your case. But a structure you could consider is as follows. So you have a first section, which is just an introductory context section, and that describes, so you have a paragraph, for example, explaining what relationship you have with the potential perpetrator. So are you married? Are you engaged? And then setting also out the key dates. So when did your relationship begin? How did you meet? If you have any children, when were they born? And then I would break, Katty, I would break the statement into three sections. So I would have the first incident of violence and explain in that section, when did it happen? How did it happen? Why did it happen? And what did they do? How did you feel and how did you react? And it's also important just to explain at this stage that when you're explaining any period or incident of violence, you need to be as specific as possible. So simply saying aggressive is not sufficient. If they've been physically aggressive, what did they do? If they hit you, where and when, how many times did they hit you? If they're verbally aggressive, what did they say?
And how did they say it? Literally, what did they say? So if they swore at you, actually outline the words that were used, you know, people don't necessarily think that you can put down swear words in a document that's going to a court. But in these instances, you need to say, this is exactly the words that were used. This is exactly what was said, because a court needs to take that into consideration to be able to understand, should an injunction be given in these circumstances or not? So I think it's very important that you don't hold back.
No, exactly. You should be as detailed as possible. You want to make the judge's job as easy as you can. So just be very detailed when you're setting out the first incident of violence. Go through those when, what, why, how. And then your second section should be the worst incident, again, following exactly the same structure, what, when, why, how. And then your third section is the last incident of violence. So have a first paragraph following exactly the same structure, what, when, why, how. But then with this section, I think it's very important to be very detailed, because it can really help the judge understand the current threat that is posed to you now.
So if you are violence applying, or abuse. So it could be controlling behavior. It could be, you know, nasty behavior. It could be text messages. It could be anything that makes you feel distressed and sad or feel fearful. So, you know, that's the message I really want to get out, because we don't want to, you know, people to think that injunctions are just there if you're being, you know, hit or that person's physically in the same room as you all the time. As I, you know, these sorts of things can happen over the phone, on our phones, by text messages. So yes, I think that's really, really key. And I think that's great advice there, India, to say, look, the last incident, make it as detailed as possible, because you're saying, look, this is when it last happened. This is what happened. And this is what I've said, and this is what that person has said. You know, for example, if you haven't told them to stop, explain why. So the judge, you know, doesn't know you, doesn't know the perpetrator from Adam. The judge needs to be able to get a very good understanding of why you're asking for this, what the circumstances around it are, and why it should be granted.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly the case.
Okay. So once the court forms have been completed and the witness statements have been included, what does somebody do next? What's the next thing they should do? Obviously, if they have a legal team, if they have solicitors or a direct access barrister who's preparing this information for them and submitting it, then they will know what to do next. But if you're doing it yourself, you've downloaded your FL-401, whether you have a C8 of a document or not, allowing the court to divulge your personal details is is up to you. You've typed out your witness statement. What do you do, India? Where should this document be sent?
Well, Hattie, you'll need to send it to your local court. And the best way to find the local court that deals with domestic violence cases, and most courts do, but just to be on the safe side, if you search, yes, in Google, find the right court or tribunal, it will take you to a page which is, hopefully there'll be a link on Get Legally Speaking, and it's a court and tribunal finder page. And if you then, there'll be a series of questions, and if you follow through the questions, so I would recommend searching by the area of law I'm interested in, and then it will ask you about your issue. You need to click domestic violence. You then enter your postcode and it will bring up a list of the nearest courts. And ensure on the right-hand side, under cases heard at this venue, that domestic violence is listed. And then you need to select your nearest court that is open to you. And then you'll see a court address. And that is where you can send your documentation to you. Yeah. And also, yes. Hattie, I think it's very important just to state that you can't serve the application on the potential perpetrator yourself. So
you need to ask the court. Let's explain that a little bit. So what happens is the court documents are sent to your local court that deals with domestic violence cases. The court will then... and what we mean by ex parte and without notice hearing, will hear your application without the potential perpetrator being notified that this application is being made. So you will have the opportunity to go yourself with or without your legal team, if you have got legal team instructed, and explain why. The judge will then, more than likely, if he feels that yes, there is grounds here for an injunction, grant you your injunction. The judge will also say two more things there. So the first thing would be, this order has to be now provided to the potential perpetrator. And what will happen is a process server or a court sheriff will need to be instructed in order to serve the perpetrator with these documents. And that's the first time the perpetrator is going to be aware of this, India, aren't they, when they get served. The second thing the court will do is say, I would now like to have a return date, which will be in the court order, to see the potential perpetrator and hear their side of the story. And that's when you will come back to court, usually within 7 days, with the other side, will also come and explain why this injunction should or should not remain in place, probably should not be in place. That's what the potential perpetrator was likely to do. But I think it's important to understand that once you walk out of a courtroom, your first hearing, where the potential perpetrator has not had an opportunity to attend or doesn't even know it's going on, and if you're granted your injunction, you've got your court order, you need to get that served on the perpetrator by either hiring a process server or asking the court's assistance to do it, so that perpetrator is, as soon as they're given that documentation and read out exactly what that court order means, they then from that point on will be in breach if they contact you in any shape or form according to the order that's presented. So between that time and the 5 and 7 days that the judge has potentially given for a return date, if they breach that order, you're protected by this court order. I think it's important for people to understand that, Rachel, isn't it? Because we don't want people to think, oh my God, I'm going to go to court, get this injunction. And then he or she will know that I've got this injunction and know that I've made this application and that they're going to come back to court to explain their story. Could they create any harm to me in that period?
Yes, exactly right, Hattie. I completely agree with everything you've just said. It's very important to emphasise that the order is only enforceable once it's deemed served on the perpetrator, who's called the respondent in the proceeding. Yes. And also the police must also be told about the order, so that if the potential perpetrator breaches the terms, you can call up the police and they would have logged the order on the police national computer. So you must take it to your local police station or the police station named in the court order.
Yes, so that your local police station do know that this order exists. But again, I reiterate, you've got the protection. If you walk out of a court, out of a first hearing with an injunction, you have protection until the second hearing, where the potential perpetrator is asked to come in and explain their side of the story. I mean, it's very rare that once that happens, a judge will say, right, I'm not going to grant this injunction. It's ridiculous. I've now heard the other side, you know, and it shouldn't have been in place. What could happen in that instance is the judge could say, I would like you to give an undertaking, a promise to the court. So even if the judge says, okay, I'll remove the injunction, but you've got to give a promise to the court that you will not do this, 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 and this to the person that's made this application for the injunction. Or the judge can say, yes, I would like this injunction after having heard the other side to stay in place, to keep the parties, you know, to protect the applicant. And it will have a lifespan of 12 months or however long a judge feels that it should have. Good. Okay, India, that's very, very informative. I hope that any listener that's considering applying for an injunction has now got a introductory understanding on what it is, how it can protect you, and how you could apply in the UK, of course. Thank you ever so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And what I will do is I'll say to our subscribers and our listeners, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com.